Hi everyone, this is the interview with a very special guest. He has won an Olympic bronze medal for the marathon in Los Angeles 1984. He's won the London Marathon in 1984 and he's also the English marathon record holder still, and it is Charlie Spedding. So how are you, Charlie?
Very well, thank you very much.
Brilliant. Today I just want you to just talk us through leading up to that marathon and just talk us through the marathon as well, particularly the Los Angeles one.
Well, okay, it's hard to know where to start that story because I was 32 years old when I ran in Los Angeles and I'd started running seriously. I'd been running at school before, but I started running seriously. I joined a club when I was 16. So really it took me 16 years to go from thinking I was good enough to take running seriously to make it to the Olympics of half my life. So that kind of puts it into perspective as to how important it was to me. The one that got in my running career was there were a lot of ups and downs, a lot of injuries, a lot of setbacks, but I was decent as a sort of a 1500 meter runner when I was about 20, but I was never good enough and I moved up to 5,000 meters and then 10,000 meters and eventually up to the marathon, and I got better at every event that I ran, every longer event that I ran, and I was more successful. And I've been to the Commonwealth Games and the European Championships at 10,000 metres, but I knew I wasn't really fast enough or good enough to win anything at those events, so eventually I moved to the marathon. And I did it. And I timed my move to the marathon to try to get to the Olympic Games. And I ran my first ever marathon at the beginning of 1984 to see if it was the event for me. And I went to Houston in January. And I won that. I won it by sitting from the vest in a sprint finish, but I won it. And I thought, yes, this is the event for me. So I trained for the London Marathon, which was the trial. And I ran a really good race there, and I won that. So I was in the Olympic team. And the marathon definitely was for me, having run two and won two. But then I was in the Olympics, and this was going to be really serious, and all the best runners in the world. So, and it was going to be very hot.
Yeah.
A lot of you still living up here in the northeast of England.
Yeah.
So part of my preparation involved going out to America about 6 weeks beforehand to try and acclimatise for the conditions we're going to run in. And I went to Boston on the East Coast because I'd been there before and I knew some people. So I was comfortable being in there. And the weather was actually slightly worse there in terms of it being hotter and more humid. So I trained in some very hot weather for the past 6 weeks. And it went very well. And I went to the Olympic Games, which was obviously the biggest event of my life, even though I've been running competitively for 16 years. And I was there having run two marathons and won them both. So it was very exciting because I knew I was up against the greatest runners in the world and I'd never ever been regarded as one of those. But I knew this was the best event for me and I didn't know, because I hadn't really been completely tested, I didn't know how good I could be at it. So that was a very important psychological thing for me going into the race, thinking, all right, I'm up against the greatest here, but this is a new event for me. I've got lots of experience as a runner. I'm in great shape. And I don't know how good I can be at this event. So I kind of opened the door to all sorts of possibilities. And that was very important that I had this open mind about how well I might do. I trained really well and I did a lot of work sort of on myself and on my own mind in terms of getting myself psychologically ready to run against these top people and believe that I could compete against them. And on race day itself, I was really nervous, but I managed to control it. The race went really well. It was a really stacked thing. We talk about it being the best marathon race that ever been up to that point because of all the people who were there.
Yeah.
In the leading group for about the first 6 miles, and it was all fine. It was there was a major move made by a couple of Africans, which I thought at first was crazy to go so hard, so early on such a hot day. And I thought, oh, this is crazy. And I wasn't a little bit by letting people go who'd gone off too fast and catching them later. But then I realised that in this break, some of the best runners, people like Rob De Castella, who was the reigning world champion, were going with it. And I thought, I can't let people that good go. So I had to make a decision. I decided I've got to go with it, no matter how fast it is. And I absolutely hammered it for about 3/4 of a mile to get on the back of this group and stay with them. And that was a vital decision I made, because we formed a group of about 10 or 11 runners who got away from everybody else. And for the rest of the race, that group was away. And I thought, well, the medalists will come from this group, so we've already got rid of most of the field. And I'm now in a great, I'll be in the top 10. I just have to keep going and stay in this group, and I'll be in the top 10, and that's brilliant.
Yeah.
So that just boosted my confidence a great deal. And then we ran in that group till we got to about 20 miles, and I'm starting to think, right, we've got to really sort this race out, because there were still 10 people there. And I was never going to win a sprint finish, if that's what it came down to. And I was expecting someone like Dick Castella, who I'd mentioned, to really put the boot in and really pick the pace up hard. And I was kind of psychologically prepared for that. And when I was looking around for him, expecting to do it, I mean, he was 10, 20 yards off the back of the group. And I thought, well, who else is going to do it? And I looked around, and I thought, well, they're all be quite content to wait, and I thought the waiting won't suit me. And I realised that I was going to have to do it. And it had never crossed my mind beforehand that I would be in that position. It never crossed my mind that I'd be running that well.
That you could lead
20 odd miles into the Olympic marathon, I would think we're going too slowly.
Yeah.
It never crossed my mind at all. I thought, I've got to really pick it up. So at about 21, 22 miles, I just went the front run really, really hard for about a mile. And it got the group down to 4. I thought, oh, I know what will happen here. So I backed up a little bit and tucked in behind Carlos Lopez from Portugal and John Tracy from Ireland. And the other guy was Joseph Nzau from Kenya. And I thought, I'll just tuck in for a bit and let someone else lead and try to go hard again later on. Even though I was really hurting, I was really working really hard, but I was, my mind was so focused and competitive, I thought I wasn't thinking about how tired I was just thinking about racing. But a short while later, Carlos Lopez just glanced around and he just changed gears. He could run nearly a minute faster than me over 10k on the track, so he was just faster than me.
Yeah.
And he picked up the pace, and I just instinctively went with him and tried to hang on, and I just couldn't. He was going so fast I couldn't. John Tracy was with me, kind of at the start to get away. I had to ease back, or else I'd have fallen apart. And John Tracy and I were together, and I glanced behind, and Justin Zhang had just disappeared. And I thought, well, I'm in second or third, and it hit me with, as we went past 37-kilometre mark, so there's 5 kilometres to go, just over 3 miles to go, it hit me, I'm going to get a medal. And this was just my wildest dream coming true. But then, obviously, yeah, I said, well, I'll get a medal if I can keep going, so I had to get that out of my mind and concentrate and focus on keeping going. And Tristan and I ran side by side until we got the stage, and we were flying along. We were really running hard and fast, and Lopez is still going away from us. He was running about 4:40 per mile, and Tristan and I were running about 4:50 per mile. And we were getting further and further away from the people behind, but we didn't realise, because I never looked back again. I just kept going. And when we got just outside the stadium, I thought, I'm going to have to make a surge to get away from him. And I was thinking about it when he did it, and he kind of caught me out, and he got about 10 yards from me. As we turned into the stadium, we had to go down a little ramp and through a tunnel underneath the stands, and I thought, I've got to catch mile down the track, and I really hammered it along there, and I got left behind him as he came back out onto the track, and we had to run down the one straight and then a whole lap.
Yeah.
And I'd really used up my last effort getting to him. I hung on to him round till we got into the back straight, and he went hard again, and I was running as hard as I could, and I ran about 69 seconds for the last 400 metres, but he ran about 67 and beat me, but I finished third. I was absolutely exhausted, but I was absolutely elated, and I definitely run the best race of my life.
Yeah, brilliant. It's just a great story. I just wanted to mention, you've got, you know, all of this story and all of the London Marathon and all that sort of thing. It's in your book, isn't it? It's From Last to First.
Yes.
Yeah, and where can people get that?
Well, at the moment, you can only get it on Kindle, but it is coming out again in paperback on April the 3rd of this year. So that's far away. That's a few weeks.
All right.
It's going to be released in paperback again. It's called From Last to First, and it should be available at the beginning of April.
Excellent. One of my favourite chapters, because I've read it two or three times now, and I mentioned to you, my favourite chapter is The Beer Drinker's Guide to Sports Psychology. So could you talk us a little bit about that chapter, because I just think it's brilliant.
Oh, my God. Well, it's called that because it relates to the time I was I'd missed a train and I had some time to kill, so I went to sit in the pub and I had a pint of beer, which I've always liked, and always believed that I didn't do any harm as long as I didn't have too many of them.
Yeah.
And I sat in the corner with a notepad and I thought really hard about marine career, and I was at the stage where before I'd really become successful, I was about 28, I'd been running quite well for years and years and years, and I felt as if I could be better than I was, but it wasn't happening. And I sat down and I really thought about it, and I realised it was all inside my head, but I didn't really, where do I start? We've all got as kind of a picture of ourselves inside our minds of who we are and what we are and what we can do, and it's like a comfort zone, and it stops you from being in very, on an evolutionary term, it stops you putting yourself in dangerous positions, but it also kind of, it can stop you believing, it keeps a lid on what you can do, I think, as well.
Yeah.
So I had to kind of change the way I thought about myself and believe that I could be better than I'd ever been before, which is a difficult thing to do because you've got years and years of history of being quite good, and your mind tends to think, well, this is what you are, you know, this is where you fit in. And I convinced myself sitting there in this pub that to be better, I had to change the way I thought about things. Because I tried lots of different training, I had to think differently. And that's really what that chapter was all about. And then it definitely worked because I went on from there to have all my success. But it was about having, asking myself questions like, what do I want? Why do I want it? And how much do I want it? And I think you have to have clear goals of what you want. But you also have to know why you want it, because that really is important when it comes down to the crunch in a race. You know, you can go into this, I really want to do well in this, but it gets to the point where it really hurts. And you have to have a good reason to push yourself on even harder when it's hurting. So why do you want it and how much do you want it is an important thing to know. And then you have to believe you can be better than you've ever done before. And I came up with a sort of a psychological trick for that. And I told myself that I had to start thinking like a caterpillar, which when I say to people, they look at me as if I'm mad, but the idea I had was that if you look at a caterpillar and you didn't know what it was, you'd never believe that it was going to grow beautiful wings and fly, because the potential to do that's kind of hidden inside it, and it needs the right conditions to develop. So I tried to convince myself that the potential to be better was hidden inside me, but hadn't come out yet because I hadn't got all the conditions right. And training was obviously part of that, but my mental approach was the other part of it. And I thought, well, if a little bug can transform itself, surely I can. And it was that type of stuff that chapter was all about.
Yeah. I think it's great the bit when you talk about the words that you use and the vocabulary.
Yes.
I think that's a big thing. I mean, I see people a lot of the time, they'll do races and things, and you'll ask them how they're going, you know, they're training and things, and you know, it's always negative. No one's ever, like, positive. And I thought that was really good in your chapter when you spoke about that, about... I think you said not bad in all out of all the words they could use.
That's right. When you ask people, I did this a lot when I was, I used to do, you know, when it was closer to my ring career, I used to do quite a lot of talks, and I would, just in the middle of it, I would just step out in the audience and just pick someone at random and just put them on the spot and say, how's your running going right now? And they would always say, not bad, because they were put on the spot, and then I would talk, you know, I would apologize for picking them out, and then I would, I'd talk about, you know, you're here because you love running, and you do it probably every day, and the expression you use when I ask you about it is not bad, and the word you're really using is bad. You're qualifying it with not, but that's the word, out of all the words in the English language, that's the word people pick. And if you associate in your subconscious mind bad with your running, that's how you'll perform. So I'm not one for being all gung-ho and saying everything's fantastic when it isn't.
Yeah.
Because that's also tricky, you know, your subconscious will also not believe you if you do that. But you should try and use words that are positive and have a positive attitude towards things. You sometimes hear people say, well, you can do anything with positive thinking. Well, you can't do anything. You know, I couldn't be a heavyweight boxer because I'm only 5'8" and 10 stone. But the truth about it is you can do everything better with positive thinking than you'll do with negative thinking. So if you think positively, you will do things better than you were doing before. And words people use in running, they always say things like, I'm going to train really hard. The trouble with that is, when are you satisfied with hard? Because if you think of training hard, however hard you've trained, you could always have trained harder. So you're kind of never satisfied with that. And your subconscious, again, doesn't like it because I trained really hard, but he wasn't very happy with it. And I think your subconscious links trying really hard with never being quite satisfied. So I used to think in terms of, I'd do a training session and I'll try to do it as close to what I was supposed to do as possible. You get people maybe doing reps on the track, and some people will run the last two faster than they're supposed to.
Yeah.
I think I've got to train hard now. I'll show them how tough I am. I used to think if I can do 10 reps in exactly the time I'm supposed to do, I've got 10 out of 10 right and 10 out of 10 is perfect. So I would use the word perfect. I would try to do perfect training.
Yeah.
In other words, I would do what I was supposed to do, not less and not more, and I would call it perfect. And, you know, once you start to think you know perfect training, it's a huge boost to how your mind thinks about it. And then when you come to a really, really difficult competition like the Olympic Games, instead of thinking, oh, this race is going to be really hard, I would think, well, today I'm going to have to run a perfect race.
Yeah.
And I associate perfect in my subconscious with doing training I'm supposed to do and just simply doing it. So running the perfect race didn't sound too overwhelming, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm asking myself for a fantastic performance. But because of the way I'd associated the words with my experiences, it worked.
Yeah, I think those are two great tips. I mean, writing, you know, what you want to achieve and why you want to achieve it, and also what you just said there about, you know, once you've got your training plan, is just stick into that training plan. And
Yeah, I mean, training plans can change, but if you, you know, the idea that you alter it at the last minute just to show how hard you are, that's a bad mistake.
Yeah, definitely. So we spoke quite a lot about your achievements, you know, your amazing achievements. What did you really struggle with? Maybe I know you've went on the mental side of things, like physically. What sort of things did you come up with that you had to overcome to get to that level?
The biggest problem was injuries. I had a lot of Achilles tendon problems, and I had to have surgery a few times, which put me way back out. I had several years in my mid-20s when I would I'd have an injury, you'd have to take it easy for a long time, you'd be unfit, so I'd build up my training, get back to decent fitness, and then be injured again, you go back down to the bottom, and then you build back up, you got injured again, and I had spells of that, and that's very frustrating, because a lot of time goes by, and you don't get anywhere, and one of the most important things about becoming a better runner is to have a long time of consistent training. If you train a little bit short of the total amount of work you could do, you're much less likely to be injured. And if you continue to do that over several years, you will just grow and get better and better and better. And I still see lots of runners pushing themselves that extra bit harder, being injured, and several years later, they're no better than they were. While someone who just always makes sure they don't get injured and keeps training consistently gets better and better. I don't know whether it was the quality of the shoes we had back in the 1970s, because it's a long time since I was in my 20s. Or whether it was me being guilty of pushing it too much, I don't know. But when I was successful later in my career, it was all the things we just talked about, but it was also going for a long period of time without getting any serious injuries. I got little niggles, but I got no serious injuries because I was very careful with the way I did things.
Yeah.
So that was the biggest problem in my career, was all the injuries that I had.
Yeah. So you just got to, just get back into it again and just try and get consistent training. Would that be your best tip?
Consistent training. And if you've got a bit of a niggle, it's much, or a bit of a sore throat or something like that, it's much better to say, well, I'll take the day off, or I'll ease right back for a few days until it clears up.
Yeah.
Because what you lose in a few days is absolutely nothing compared to what you lose if you carry on and make yourself really ill or really tear a muscle and you're out for months. It's very difficult for most runners because of their mindset of being determined to train. It's a vital decision to make. It's much better to back off if you've got a problem and get it cleared up so you can then continue.
Yeah, brilliant. Charlie, just to finish up, I've set up a kind of a new event which is called the Monthly Mile, and it's done once a month, and it's for beginners and people who've been running a while and things. The fastest time so far has been 4:40. Now, I know you're known for your marathons and things, but I want to know, if you were to do it in your peak, what sort of time do you think you could do? Yeah?
The fastest I ever ran a mile was 4:03.5.
4:03.
I was 3.5 seconds away. But that was back in my early 20s when I was running a lot of mile races. So, as I said earlier, I was a good runner, but not quite at those sort of distances, but not quite good enough to be getting into major championships. But obviously, I was able to to the top class marathon runners because I had enough speed to be able to cope with the pace of marathon that.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't like to know what I could do with my win now. It wouldn't be 4:40, I'm gonna show you.
All right. Yeah, we run it in South Shields. I know in your book as well you mentioned doing, I think you do a race on Gypsy's Green track.
Yeah.
South Shields. It's just outside of there. But yeah, we do it once a month and it's proved really popular and we're trying to kind of build it up so it's a big event each month.
All right, good. How many people do you get?
The first one was in January and it was on the worst night possible and we had 79. And then last month we had 92, so we're hoping in March to break 100. But yeah, it's going really good. I'd just like to thank you for your time, and I'd just like to again just tell the listeners they should really pick up a copy of this book from Last to First. It's got all of his details about his races and you know where he started with running, and it's really really good. So I'd just like to thank you again for your time there, Charlie. I'd just like to thank Charlie again for taking part in that interview. It was really, really inspiring. I spoke to Charlie after the interview as well, and Charlie, you know, really nice guy, really down to earth, and I asked him about getting some signed copies for the book, which he agreed to. So what you can do is, if you were looking to get a signed copy, I'm going to be getting a limited amount of these. If you go to runeatsleep.co.uk/free-tips, so FREETIPS, you will get the information straight to your email inbox, and you know you'll have first dibs on the book. It's really really good book. I mean, I've read it 2 or 3 times. Really inspiring, and it was really good to just get an insight into that. What did you think, Nick?
It makes me want to read it. It is really, really inspiring what he's saying, local lad, and how he just kind of comes good. And I think he's kind of the psychological approach he has to it and all that. It's really, really good, very interesting kind of stuff. I'm going to go and read it, I think.
Yeah, I think it's excellent. I just think the psychology side of it, I mean, you get a lot of books, like running books, and they just say like what the training was and that, whereas he goes into like believing in himself and how, you know, trying to get that next level and feeling like he wasn't good enough, and then how he got to that point where he's starting to believe in himself and he was leading the Olympic marathon at one point, which is, you know, really, really inspiring. So yeah, if you are interested in getting a signed copy, as I say, I can only get limited edition because I'm only a small guy and I can't carry many books.
Limited edition? Limited amount?
Limited amount. Well, it will be a limited edition. go to runeatsleep.co.uk/free-tips. And I'll send you the information first. You've got to just sign up your name and email address, and then I'll send it straight to your email inbox as soon as possible. Thanks very much for listening. If you could share this on social media, that would be brilliant. And tell your friends about it as well. If you could leave us a review, if you are on iTunes, that would be brilliant as well. Thanks very much, and see you shortly.